Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
When I was a little tyke, my grandfather, my father's father, Grandpa Long, he had a chair. I remember he had this, remember his chair that kind of like, it was a mechanic. I thought it was so cool. It pushed him up. It was a great TV watching chair, an armchair. And it went like, and like kind of pushed him up.
It was like a lazy boy before lazy boys existed.
Yes. It was a lazier boy because it was so lazy that it
was like a lazy man.
Yes. It was lazy man. And he used to love Westerns. I'd sit there and watch with him, but they all seemed the same to me. Like, you know, like John Wayne seemed to be in every one of them. And he would always say to me, did you see this one? And I always felt like, oh, I wish I had. Because I wanted to connect, you know.
Because he wanted to connect.
Yeah, exactly. And so then my young mind was blown when I saw a movie called Young Guns. It was the first time. It was a Western. It was a Western with, like, cool, current, hip actors that I knew that were cool to me, like Kiefer Sutherland and Christian Slater, Emilio Estevez, the coolest. And so I remember saying to him, hey, he said, oh, did you see this one when we were watching some old John Wayne movie? And I said, no, but have you seen Young Guns? And he kind of looked at me blankly, and I said, and I just rattled off the list of, you know, Charlie Sheen and Lou Diamond Phillips, and no, and, you know, just different generations, and we missed a potential connection.
Ship passing in the night.
Yeah.
But you know what? I bet, in retrospect, he appreciated your attempt at connecting.
I hope
just
so.
Just as you, in retrospect, appreciate his attempt.
Exactly. It's all in the intention. His intention.
Amen.
Yes. And here we go. And hopefully your intention is to listen to Life is Short, because you're about to. Don't go anywhere.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
And with me as always is...
Say that again.
I'm your host, Justin Long.
I got that part.
And with me as always, that was the with me as always part.
With me as always.
Too much coffee, maybe. Uh-oh. This is going to be interesting. With me as always is... You just mouthed the words. Like,
I did.
Waiting for Guffman. You're like Catherine O'Hara.
You go,
my brother. Mostly my co-host.
Your addiction coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that what it's called? Addiction coach. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess so. Two sits in solemn silence in a dull, dark dock.
In a pestilential
prison with a lifelong lock.
God, we made, in the movie that we have coming out in August or September, Lady of the Manor, we made Judy Greer do, it's in the script. She's an actress.
She got paid to do it.
She was very good at it too. She had to do, what was the one? To sit in solemn silence. Yeah. That was a tricky one, but she nailed it. That was a tricky one. What's the whole thing? We might as well do it.
Anyway, hi everybody.
Cut it out.
Oh no.
My
name's Christian. You never introduced me.
Should we do this again?
No, this is great.
Okay. You don't like Westerns.
New
either.
Listeners
man, yeah.
Who are tuning in for our guest today are going to be pleasantly surprised by this banter.
The episode that the show unraveled. It just went off the rails. Were you into Westerns?
I was into Young Guns.
Exactly. That's the movie.
You don't both have to be into Young Guns.
You don't both have to not have liked Westerns until you saw Young Guns, and then it changed the way you saw the genre.
Oh, it was the coolest, though. Young Guns 1. And I might have liked Young Guns 2 even more.
I think...
You don't both have to like Young Guns a lot, but like Young Guns 2 more?
I think I did, too, because... you know why? Because the addition of the two cool new cast members.
Yes. And the addition of...
Oh, wow. Our guest today.
The soundtrack.
The soundtrack was so cool. I mean, the whole thing was cool. But it's like, you know, I wonder if in the first one they were like, God, everything about this is cool. But maybe it made somebody cool, like our guest today, say they wanted to participate, like feel cool, you know, feel like okay about participating in the second one.
If there was a drinking game where every time we said cool on this episode.
Oh, my God.
People wouldn't make it very long.
No, you'll be wasted before the end of the intro.
That was a pretty uncool way of saying that.
Wasted.
You'll be wasted by the end of the intro.
Would the word uncool count if you were doing the cool drinking game?
No.
Well, why? Because cool is in the word.
It doesn't matter. It's also, we're not going to say uncool nearly as many times.
We might if we're talking about ourselves in comparison to our cool
That's
guest
true.
Today.
So our guest today is someone who's always been cool in our lives.
Yeah.
Jon Bon Jovi.
Oh, man. And after this talk that I had, that was the first time I met him, he's even cooler. Continues to be cool. We were talking about this in the context of Jon Bon Jovi. Who else in our lives, did we talk about this on the show? Who else in our lives has been cool consistently throughout our lives?
We talked about this privately the other day.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't talk about it on the show.
Okay. Sometimes I don't know.
We were born, Justin was born in the late 70s. I was born in the early 80s. So to try to think of someone who has, in our entire memory, let's say we start having memories back to when you're, 4 or 5 years old, right? Mm-hmm. In my memory, in my life, I've always known who Bon Jovi is. Always.
Yeah.
And he's always been cool.
Yeah.
And I'm almost 40 years old now, and he's still cool. So it's hard to think of people who I've always known to be cool and who are still cool.
Well,
that's very hard to think of a list.
I know. We were trying.
Denzel Washington.
Denzel Washington. Michael Jordan.
Yes.
Always been cool. Who else? We had a couple others that were like, yeah. Because
Springsteen.
Yep. Yep.
Billy Joel.
Yep. But didn't you argue that he went through a phase, the River of Dreams phase was not...
Not as cool, but he remains cool.
Oh,
that's the
you
point.
Were shitting all over River of Dreams. Like, I could walk in the...
All right, back to Bon Jovi.
Okay.
He's got the John Bon Jovi Soul Foundation, which does so much great work. They just opened a food bank during COVID, during
millions of
the
dollars.
Pandemic. They've raised so much money, and he himself has actually done work. I mean, he serves food at food kitchens.
Yeah, he is cool.
He is like, he really walks the walk.
Yeah, I mean, if you met somebody like that who did that, who just did that, that was what they did, it'd be like, oh, fuck, what a good person, what a cool person. But in addition to that, he's Jon Bon Jovi, and he sings those songs.
And the latest songs he's
oh, yeah.
been singing.
Great
he's
album.
He's got this great album out.
2020.
Very easy to remember. It's
yeah.
It's called 2020. And it's awesome. We've been listening to it the last few days. And it is, it's like there's elements of classic Bon Jovi in there, but it feels very current because the songs are mostly all about what's happening in the world now.
Yeah.
So everyone will be able to relate to lyrically to them.
Let's get into it. Let's talk to him about the album, his philanthropic endeavors, and a lot of other things that make him cool. Just how easy he was to talk to, I think, was the coolest thing for me. But you're about to hear it. I was stuck between words. You're about to hear it. So here it is. My talk with the incredibly, effortlessly cool, decades long cool, Jon Bon Jovi.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, mm-hmm. this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
John, pleasure. What a pleasure. Look at that room. What are those photos there?
Oh, those were a wedding gift from my first manager.
Oh, wow.
They were not Andy Warhol's. Andy was sick by then, but Peter Max did those. But they're nostalgic because it's my wife and I.
How cool. And you guys have been, what a great story. What a rare story. You've been together forever.
Yeah.
How cool.
40 years now?
God, good Lord. I mean, it's funny. John, of all the things you've accomplished, that's something I probably admire the most about you. That's like the most admirable thing of the many things.
Are you married?
I'm not, no. And, you know, to be totally candid, I think one of my big difficulties is just the at a certain age, there were just so many options. I don't know how to say that without sounding like an asshole. But, you know, for like a nerdy kid from Connecticut, it was like, I just wanted to try too much.
Right. You're in the candy box and you're like, oh, got it.
Yeah. 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 So, again, I mean, I'm much better now. I've matured, I think. I don't want to, you know.
I'm going to interview you.
I'm 42. Yeah, yeah. I should be lying down for this. And we grew up similarly, too, I think. Two brothers, Catholic family.
Yeah, I have two younger brothers. Yeah.
Oh, they're both younger. And what did they, were you guys close growing up, John?
Yeah, in as much as we could be because there was such an age difference. My brother Tony's just shy of 5 years younger. And then my younger brother, Matt, has got to be 13 years younger. So to him, I think I was an adult. Yeah.
And even 5 years at that time, you know, when you're kids, that's a gap.
You don't have the same friends or even the same, you know, likes. And we all got closer as we got older. And my younger brother, Matt, is the one that spends the most time with me. Professionally, he'd always be like my body guy. But I think by the time he was 6 or 7 years old, I had a record deal. So, certainly eight or nine. So by then so he sort of grew up, you know, in second grade and I had a record deal. So everything he's ever known has been, I was that to him. So
he must have gotten a lot of mileage out of that as like a junior high schooler, like my brother's.
It worked, as you well know, then it worked positively and negatively, you know, to have siblings that who lived in your shadow. So that had its benefits and things that were seriously detrimental. But overall, you know, it's all good.
Well, you also seem like I've seen you on a bunch of talk shows, and I recently saw you on a like that pizza tasting show.
Yes.
Where you ran into Nicholas Braun.
Yes.
On the street, the actor. Yes, yes.
Love that show.
I love it. It strikes me how down to earth you seem considering the things you've done and the arenas you've played and the amount of adulation that's been showered on you. I always, and even now, you seem so unassuming and, hey, that is really admirable too. And I wonder, it was probably easier for your brothers because you don't seem like it ever went to your head or did it? And if so, how did you adjust?
I don't think anyone in the band let it go to their head. And a lot of it had to do with our being from here. Even at the height of our initial, you know, explosion to fame, which was our third album in Slippery When Wet, I remember many a conversation during that period when we would say to each other, we're the same, right? They're all changing. And that was the internal conversation Suddenly, you know, you're 25 and the head of a major corporation as opposed to being a singer in a rock band. And your parents are asking you for advice. And you're thinking, I don't know anything more than I knew last year. Why are you asking me now?
Well, did it then just seem that like that, John? Was it just Twilight Zone-y and weird? Did you ever find yourself attempting to give your parents advice or carrying yourself like you knew more than you did?
Sure. Who wouldn't? So yeah. Who wouldn't? But I think that we were all aware that it wasn't us, it was it. And Slippery When Wet led into New Jersey, which was another massively big record for us. And then we got physically burned out. Too much touring, too many TV shows, and so we were just burned. And by the end of it, we didn't know why we were going to not be working for a long period of time, but we knew that that was necessary. And so, you know, that's when I went off and did Young Guns and that whole world started for me. But the guys, we all had to be independent of the it because God bless them in retrospect, but the managers, agents, lawyers, they were trying to do their job, but what their job was doing was killing the individuals. And it's an age-old story. Any, you know, Justin Timberlake just, you know, had that a couple years ago. Generations of kids, it's always going to be the same thing, you know, the burnout.
They're just trying to suck as much out of you. They're trying to squeeze.
I'm old enough to say that it's not sucking anything out of anything. It's that they're all just trying to do their job. You know, I think that if I were ever to be in the position that I were managing a kid or being the agent or be the father of a kid, I would tell them to have enough faith in their talent that they could take a whole year, go to sleep. I'll wake you up in a year. You know, just you need 2 years to get the next record or movie together. That's fine. Don't worry about it. You know, but falling victim to the treadmill compounded by the fact that celebrity feeds you a bunch of nonsense that you really shouldn't have believed. And, you know, all those things. I could write that book now, but in and of the moment, who knew? You know, who knew?
Did you, and you must have seen that happen to a lot of your colleagues. I mean, I'm sure most of them.
Most of them, most of them. You know, whether how many gold stars did you get for going to rehabs or you're no longer viable as a act or an actor or, you know, or how many marriages and divorces or are you got any money left? Or sure, I've seen chapters on end about that. You know, I've seen that I've been around far too long to not have seen a lot of that.
Yeah. And every time you see it, does it solidify the choices that you made? Does it make you feel better about, I mean, being with the same person, being grounded, returning to New Jersey? Did it kind of reinforce those?
You know, I can't speak for anyone else. So that would be a terrible assumption to make based on that question and the trite answer, which would be, of course, I'm a genius.
Yeah.
But that wasn't it. That wasn't it. Yeah. That wouldn't be fair to anyone else. But for me, you know, I can look from afar and say, these are choices that I made, whether or not they were right throughout the 40 years or not. But they were the choices I made.
You mentioned, John, Young Guns, that being kind of a turning point in your career. And you knew those. I would say that I was like a huge Young. I was just a nut, like a Young Guns. I thought that was the coolest. I mean, it was. It was the coolest. Yeah. Did you know those guys? Is that how you got into that, the world in the movie?
No, I was a fan like anyone else. And truthfully, I didn't know very many actors, and I certainly didn't know any, you know, movie stars. But Richie was dating Ally Sheedy and from the Brat Pack. And of course, she was very close to Emilio. And after Young Guns and before Young Guns 2, Emilio said that they would like to use Wanted Dead or Alive in their film. And I said, I could write you something specific for the movie. And so I went out to the set, and at that time in my life, I was looking for something else. I didn't know what that something was, but something. And I went out to my first movie set, and my takeaway, honestly, was this. I said, all you guys, you learn other hobbies while you're making a film, and typically in this case, they learned how to shoot a gun. They learned how to ride a horse. They learned things that up until that point in my career, all I did was make a record tour. We had nothing left to talk about because we didn't have hobbies. It's all we knew. You know, so strangely enough, that was appealing to me when I went out to that movie set. And then they said, hey, you know, so be cute. Why don't you be an extra in this jail scene? Okay. And then when I came home, I said, I need to start to look into this. And then I started to study. And I took years of lessons after that. And it helped me grow as an artist and as a writer. And it added...
Study acting.
Yeah. I studied acting, I guess, for... I don't know, 4 or 5 years before I got my first role. And then they were small.
No shit.
Which, again, it helped me. And I loved immensely the craft of acting. I loved it immensely. But it seemed to me that anytime I'd get even a little spark and get the opportunity at a bigger role, I would disappear for a long period of time because we'd be making a record. And I finally confronted my agents and everybody and said, what's the problem? I thought I was doing so well. And they said, you have to take this seriously. You have to choose. And at the time, if you think about it,
it's one or the other.
Whether it was Will Smith or Ice-T or Sting or Madonna or, you know, Phil Collins, all of those guys before, I'm talking like, you know, 90. You had to choose either or. You weren't doing both.
Kid or play.
You know, you had to choose. And I said, well, we're too successful musically. And until I, you know, I can't make the same money and I'm really loving making records. So I can't. Mm-hmm. So therefore the quality of the role I was being offered was getting to be embarrassing already. So, you know, I hung it up.
But what great choices. I mean, it's great. Like you're choosing between.
It's great. And it brought such humility back to the music business. You were studying the classics. Yeah. You were reading, you know, the classic playwrights or commercial things that appeal to you. And coming from the folding chair in the audition room, which is humility at its best, to going back and being on the big stage, it was great for me because I could take that humility back to music.
Oh, that's interesting. And that helps answer this. I mean, it's going to keep coming up because it really does fascinate me how you... Man, so I've met a lot of people and not many in your rarefied position, but the few that I've met strike me as having some, again, I'm generalizing, but you just seem so normal and unaffected by all of this. You said you're close now with your siblings and one of them worked with you.
Both of them did. Both of them do when we're touring. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So all that stuff it's all been ironed out and now you guys are just close and it's,
Cause we all grew up and one of them directs the video program of the show. So he's not necessarily going to be with me. And the other one is my body guy, if you will. He's my right hand, you know, Matt's like 6'4" and huge. So it looks like more.
Oh my God.
So, so that's just how it worked out, you know, but yeah.
Dude, 6'4".
I know I'm 5'10". What happened to me?
yeah so he did get some of the he did get some cool things. Did they play music? You started as a teenager playing guitar and piano. Why those instruments? How'd you choose those?
Well, the guitar seemed like the cool thing and every kid wanted to go be a rock and roll star. You'd pick up a guitar and if it didn't work out, it didn't set your family back, even if they had room for a piano in the house. So, you know, I think that's what I gravitated towards. And then I ultimately just ended up the singer simply because no one else wanted to do it. And
Did you sing in school and church? Did you always have an aptitude for
it? Let's just say I always liked it. I don't know that it always liked me or the teachers believed that I had any future in it. I don't think that I was ever, in their top three for anything. But
really?
Yeah, never.
Isn't that funny?
Never. No.
And I know you won't be able to indulge me in this. I know because you're not a look at me, look at me guy. But I'm now imagining your teachers who were like, well, no, not John.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, that's all true. I was just having a conversation with my mother the other day, and she recalls the story much differently than I do, but she then admitted to the truth. She said, remember the first time you came off this stage at a talent contest with your first band? And I said, yeah, I remember you told me you wanted to crawl under the seats and that it was horrible. And she at first was like, no. I didn't say that. And then about 20 minutes later, she goes, yeah, I think I did.
Oh my God.
I was like, that's okay. It gave me the motivation. It's what, you know, it's,
again,
all of that gave me motivation.
I'm also maybe cherry picking this information, but like data mining for to answer the question of how you do have so much humility, but that'll do it.
When your mother tells you you stink.
Yeah. Now, how old were you when that happened?
Oh, I was really young. I couldn't have been 15-ish, you know?
Wow. But did you have, you must have had a real drive. You must have had confidence to get up and do,
Never lacked for confidence ever. Never.
Yeah.
And the
popular.
No. Being in a rock band in high school in the late 70s was not something that anyone really did. There was a couple of us, but no. I wasn't the athlete or the tough kid, you know, or the greaser. I looked at it as sort of a life sentence, you know, get me through school, just free me, let me go, you know, and because the drinking age in New Jersey was 18, this is really key to my success. Because the drinking age was 18, you could be 16 and then 17 when you just got good enough to play in a bar. That was integral. Because you could go there and watch, you could go there and participate. You could go there and actually, you know, have a direction and an idea of who you wanted to be. And so by the time I graduated high school, there was no plan B.
Wow.
But and that was that.
And what was it, John? It was just if you can reduce it to something like a feeling, was it just the feeling of being on stage? Was it the atmosphere, the girls, the everything
in your youth? All the naive sure it was girls in the stage, sure. I think that there was this just kind of innate kind of rebellion that if school was setting me up for the cubicle and that's what life was and it wasn't an adventure, then what's the point, you know? And we had a very nice, very easy middle-class New Jersey upbringing. It certainly wasn't, you know, the wrong side of the tracks. But all of our families had to work two jobs. You know, like my mother and father worked 6 days a week to make sure that we had a roof and food and, you know, and all the, they could buy me a guitar. But so that kind of work ethic was instilled in you. But the idea of me doing that, and I remember it, in the late 70s, you get a phone call from the recruiting office of the service, and they say, we've got an idea. Come and see the world. Join the Navy. And my three best friends said yes. And there was four of us, and my three best friends said yes. And I was like, not unless the uniforms come in different colors and I can grow my, you know, I was the wise guy. I was like, there's no chance. I'm playing Tuesday and Thursday. And so they truly, the only way out was to join the service. And I was going to be in a band.
So, and it was, the sense that you'd be confined. I remember having that fear, and I don't know how I was exposed to it because my dad was a teacher and my mom was an actress, a struggling actress, but a good actress. But I had this fear of like being a drone, you know, fear of, you said cubicle, being in a cubicle, that always, being confined like that always really freaked me out. And that must have been, I would imagine, just wanting the freedom of
the beautiful thing about that 18-year-old comment I made before was that I didn't have to get that far down the road where I had to worry about someone else or a paycheck. When you're 16 and 17, I was still in high school. I was able to come home at night, you know, but when you'd come home at night and say, I did something better than I did yesterday. Or, you know, because we lived so close to Asbury Park and it encouraged live music, and Southside Johnny and Bruce Springsteen were already established big by our standards, right. by our standards, big recording artists. And there were so many guys in each of those two bands. Chances are you literally would walk into them on the boardwalk or in a nightclub. You know,
no shit.
Yeah, the first time Bruce jumped on stage with me, I was 17 years old.
Get out of here.
So, you know, that was where our Beatles. Yeah.
Oh, my God. And, John, when that happened, are you awestruck? Are you... had you ever met him socially?
No. I mean, this is the guy that wrote the songs about the places where you were walking down the street. Southside Johnny produced some of the first demos. I was the singer in someone else's band, but Southside Johnny produced the demos. You know, Bruce jumped up on stage with me. There was that kind. I was, you know, the kid. I was known as, you know, oh, the kid. The kid's pretty good. The kid's all right. You know, and so those memories made for milestones in my life at that time.
Do, 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 do,
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled babbel.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
I mean, I don't know how to ask this, what a generic thing to say, but how can you walk me through the excitement and the what are you feeling when this is all happening?
Well, to me, they were the Beatles, but in teenage terms, neither of them could play an arena or have hit songs. They were making records, but they weren't big yet. You know, if that makes any sense. So,
yeah,
you know, Aerosmith was big. Leonard Skinner. It was the late 70s. It was all that. It was Queen. It was Alice Cooper. It was Led Zeppelin. That was big. But guys,
we had Billy Joel.
Billy was, of course, making records too. But yeah. I wouldn't say that Billy was bigger than Bruce. I think they were successful, but not. They weren't, you know, in the centerfold of Circus magazine the way that Led Zeppelin would have been, if that makes sense. So, you know, it made the impossible possible. That's the bottom line.
I see. Yeah, and so it now is it's not just like this pipe dream at this point. You're performing with these people who are bona fide.
Not regularly, but the idea was that you could touch them. They were there.
Yeah,
they were there. Yeah. It made the impossible possible. You know, and that was important.
And then how quickly did it take off in the sense that you didn't have to do another job or you're now able to support yourself?
Because I could live at home, there was no overhead to worry about. And when you were writing your own songs, and even at the time when I was in someone's band who was the songwriter, there was no money in that. There was no money in that. there was $100 to split between the band if you were lucky. And so that wasn't a way to make a living. But even at 18 years old, I was smart enough to have quit my own cover band and say to my school chums, sorry, boys, but the only way to have a life in this is to go and make, you know, your own music. And so I did that.
How did you know that? You say you're smart enough, but where did that thought come from?
There were so many imitations of Bruce and John and those guys down there that you knew even at 18 years old, that's the real one. And that's the one who wishes he was that. And that's never going to happen for him. Uh-huh. Even at 18, I knew that. I was like, the only way to do this is to go and figure out who you want to be and create that. So I quit.
And so what's that process like, John? How do you go from recognizing that to then cultivating your own sound, your own voice?
Right. And in and of that moment, I was in a 10-piece band with horns. And as I was talking to a guy that really was a carbon copy of Springsteen, and I'm thinking, that's kooky. You're 10 years older than me. what's your excuse? You know, I'm trying to be Southside Johnny over here. And I go, I feel like I'm in the Muppets. It's time to leave. So
he's like, I'm Goose.
Yeah, right. Pretty much. No. So I quit my own band and I became the singer of someone else's band, singing pop rock, early 80s, new wave sounding stuff, but learning the craft, learning what four chords make for a song. And, you know, the first one, the first five, the first 10 songs, that band was short-lived, but from there I had a springboard. And it was only 2 years later that I wrote Runaway. So, you know, by then it never looked back.
So Runaway is then done through, how do you, you have to, you're now kind of known somewhat in the business in terms
not
of,
really, but you know. I had played a bunch of times on the shore. Not to the tune of drawing more than 100 people to come and see you, but I had gotten the most amazing demo of Runaway and a whole lot of other songs without the band at all. And by this time I was so frustrated because I had sent it around to managers, labels, tried to, you know, connections through when I was playing in the club a lot. And I had a thought, I'm going to go to a radio station. This radio station happened to be just outside of New York, saying they were broadcasting in New York. They were so new, they didn't have a receptionist. That too was God. Because they didn't have a receptionist, I could go in and bang on the window of the DJ's booth. And I got his attention, and after his shift, he came out, he spoke to me, small talk. He says, we're going to do a homegrown record of local talent. He says, and by the way, that song sounds like it's a hit. And before you knew it, I was on the radio in New York without a band, manager, lawyers, anything.
Holy shit. What was that? That was Runaway?
No. Runaway. And it was a brand new radio station called WAPP and a DJ by the name of Chip Hobart. And I was on the Double Day radio chain, and all those same A&R guys and managers were all looking around their desk for that cassette that I had sent all through New York and LA.
Wow. Isn't that funny? The app gave you your start before.
Isn't that funny? The technology. Yeah, APP. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I wonder, and was the guy Pitt? Was the guy like, kid, get out of here.
He got it because they were new and he wanted to endear himself to the community and no one else was really there. There was a person or two around the studio. I mean, it literally looked like a construction scene outside of the DJ's booth, and they were broadcasting commercial free all summer. But I had a crazy thought, and that's just the way I've always been, is I think differently. So I thought, who's the loneliest man in the music business? A DJ. Who likes music more than a DJ? You know, so he sits there with his record and his headphones and tries to preach to the masses with no idea if anyone's listening. You know, that's passion.
Funny?
You know,
it's funny. I wonder who that guy was. I wonder if he must know.
Oh, God. Yeah. I've seen him, you know, 100 times since. When we got in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I was relating that story. And then after the speech, I was in the press room and I heard a voice and he stood up and it was the guy. It was the DJ. And I dragged him up on stage, and he had one of the old satin jackets on from the early 80s, and the band all took pictures with him because it was a moment in our history.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is awesome. This might be a dumb question. Don't you love questions that start that way? This is probably really dumb, but why did you name your latest album? It's your 15th studio album, 2020.
Well, in March of 19, we went to Nashville to make what I thought was the record. And in retrospect, really was just the first batch of songs. Typically, I'll write a couple of topical songs on a record, but never the entire thing. As we recorded the record and what was now roughly a year ago now, March of 20, I think the record's done. I start to actually do some early promotion. And I was in the UK re-recording a song called Unbroken, which is about vets with PTSD, with Prince Harry. With Harry at Abbey Road for the British military. His last week of acting as Prince and his duties, his first event was with me. And so we record.
Well, he hasn't been in the news. So we should, what was he doing on the record? Was he doing something musical?
He is the face of the British military, obviously having been a pilot and a soldier for nearly a decade. And he's the patron saint of their Invictus Games, which is sort of like their Paralympics. And so they have a choir. And so I had sent him the song. And I says, our military are going to use this. I wrote it for a documentary. Would you want to do this? And he says, I get it. And so we went to Abbey Road just a year ago and recorded the song. So we come back here. It's the first week of what becomes COVID. Things started to get crazy and the shutdown's happening. I pull the plug on the record. I then decide to cancel outright the tour because I'm concerned that people need their money for credit cards and rent and things like that. And now I'm holding this record, but the idea of it being topical was making more and more sense to me. So I considered that I could open up the can of worms again, dig deeper into a bunch of these songs. And I started to tweak them. And then when COVID went into lockdown, I wrote Do What You Can about the COVID crises. And then after the George Floyd death, I couldn't help but write American Reckoning. So now this record that I initially thought 2020 was clear vision and how cute will it be for a campaign poster turned into a very topical, serious record. But one that I'm very proud of because I think it marked a moment in time.
Sure. And I'm so grateful you were able to go back in. I bet you are to go back in there and had it come out. And you missed an opportunity to really speak about what was all the changes that were taking place.
Yeah. You know what's the bitch about this one, Justin, is that you put it out in this vacuum known as 2020. And it's sort of heartbreaking because, you know, 2 years work went into it and it's out and I can't tour it and you can't even go to a TV show and play or anything.
I know. You got to do these shitty podcasts to talk about it. I know, John, it must be so weird for you. I mean, somebody who is, I'm sure, has derived so much joy from playing and you've played the best venues and that's the thing, right? You tour an album. That's just like how it goes. It must be so weird,
it's so weird to just sit. Because I don't know the reception to the record. I know the fan base really like it, but when you can't go out and work it, it's not like I sit in the house listening to the radio. You know, it's like, it's very hard to wrap my head around that the record's out, you know?
And for songs, like, how else do you tell whether you're actually playing them for people? How else do you feel the reception?
You don't, unlike any other.
Yeah.
You know, every time you write a record, you think it's the best thing you've ever done. Okay. So, you know, there you are in and of that moment. And if it's not, it's not. But you think it is. That's why you want to release it. So with this record, what is different is I didn't have the experience of performing those songs live. So I don't know if they work or not. There have been songs on previous records that I swore on my life that song's a smash.
I wonder.
You know, and it doesn't work. The song doesn't work live.
Ah.
And you go, I don't know what's missing. I did everything I could. That one didn't work. You know?
Huh.
So this one's the Twilight Zone.
Are there, John, and conversely, are there ones that are hits, are like people just eat them up and you're like, huh, I didn't see that coming?
Well, my greatest story is that Living on a Prayer. You know, I didn't know. I honestly didn't know. It was so,
really?
Well, for a number of reasons, but first and foremost, it was so unique and so different than anything on the radio at the time that I was like, well, I know we created something, but maybe we should just give it to that soundtrack. And you know, Richie was like, you're crazy. This is special. And of course, it came to life when we got with the band and did it in pre-production and then ultimately recorded it. But in and of the moment, that was a classic case of I was completely wrong.
Wow. And then you record it, and right away, when you feel the energy of it?
No, because it wasn't the first single. You know, we were, again, it was so different. Again, in 1986, Tears for Fears and Power Station were on the radio. I mean, it didn't sound like things on the radio. Rock music in that way wasn't in the brightest light in and of that moment. From 86 with Slippery till probably close to 90, rock and roll had a resurgence, a big wave.
Yeah, thanks in part to, you can't say it because you're a humble person, but thanks in large part to you. It must have felt, so what were those the years that we was just like nonstop? I mean, on this level that four other people can relate to? Were those the years? Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you something, my brother. The hedonistic 80s were everything that they said they were. You know, and being in a rock band and being John Bon Jovi in a rock band was pretty fucking good.
It's funny. I'm sure people always dance around that with you. I would imagine they, because everyone wants to know, you know, just like you did when you were a kid, everybody wants to know what that feels like. And there's no way to ask that. And I'm sure there's no way to really answer it without, well, you got to get into the...
Yeah.
Some stuff.
You know, yeah. Again, I'm so far removed from it that I was never not
right,
not me. But the truth is you could tell a little bit more of the truth without giving it all away. And the truth is we had a lot of fun.
Yeah. When it was happening, when it was like the most fun, do you remember thinking, do you ever have that moment where you're like, this is the best. It's never going to like this. It can't get any better than this. And like, we're going to look back at this. And so we should soak it up. We should enjoy it.
I think that if you're asking even from the professional journalist asking the musician the question, I think every step of the way from the block dance to the club to the first record to that Slippery When Wet moment, you thought that that was the highlight. And then you couldn't believe that it kept getting better. And from the fun standpoint, it just always got better until you didn't, you know, until you found other things to keep you happy, you know, to have fun with. So,
right.
You know, this was good work. Good work if you can get it. And we enjoyed every minute of it while still showing up for work.
That's the thing. Yeah, right. That's probably a very fine line to walk.
That's true.
I was listening... Yeah. John, have you heard the podcast? It's called The Winds of Change, about the Scorpions.
Yes.
Were you on that plane? Were you on that tour?
I was the one closing the shows, pal. Yeah.
Oh, my God. What? I mean, forget the plane, forget the flight, but what was it like being over there? Did you guys understand? I mean, was there any way to understand the historical significance of what you were doing?
You have to remember the other intricacies of the whole thing. That was those portraits that you see here on that wall. That's my first manager. So that's Doc McGee. He was my first manager. And why we were going was he was in trouble for having been involved in selling yes. drugs. And how would we know? You know, how
yes.
he was going legit by this time, right? And all that stuff. So yeah. Doc managed Motley Crue and Bon Jovi. And so he offered this concert at a time when MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and all that was, you know, Tipper Gore was in front of Congress talking about drugs and just say no with Nancy Reagan and all that kind of stuff. So Doc offers this, let's go to the Soviet Union. And he's got, you know, Bon Jovi at the height of Slippery's Into New Jersey. We're pretty big. And then he's got Motley Crue and Ozzy Osbourne and Scorpions. And we take a new band called Skid Row and Cinderella. And so, you know, we now have this festival that goes over to play the Soviet Union. But I was the poster boy. We went the winter before to set it up and sell it and do the press and all that stuff. And then when we went back in the summer wow. of 89 to do the show, truthfully, I ended up staying in while everyone else was out and doing their thing. And ultimately, uh-huh. it's just like any old adage was, and the singer went home. You know, so I wasn't out enjoying it the way everyone else was.
What did you think? What's the point of it? Like, why are we doing this? Was it? Was it?
Oh, we knew what it was. Like, so Doc didn't go to uh-huh. jail. You know, I mean.
Oh, oh. yeah. You wow. Know. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So the manager didn't go to jail.
Take one for the team.
Yeah. So we were gone.
Wow.
And it was, you know, and it was meant to be something legendary and all that kind of stuff. Which, again, folklore makes it bigger than it was.
Yeah,
it was, and it wasn't, and it was crazy.
Well, John, sorry to interrupt you. Did Tommy Lee? I mean, you're
yes.
first, maybe you can't talk about this. Did he really get that pissed
punched
that you
him in
did
the face.
Thing?
Yes, yes, yes. So the folklore is this: we're all playing this show. We are commercially the most successful of all the bands, but everybody's, you know, big in their own right, obviously. And mm-hmm. Ozzy and the Scorpions had been around a decade longer than the rest of us. And, but we were insistent on closing the show. So everyone had egos in this whole mess. And the mm-hmm. first night we play, and honestly, we got our asses kicked by a German band called the Scorpions, just absolutely annihilated. The whole magic wow. of my band was my communicating with the audience and then telling uh-huh. these stories and then singing these songs that you hear on the radio. The Scorpions uh-huh. were like a Panzer tank. They didn't care about language. Uh-huh. Russia, the Soviet Union, didn't know rock and roll records. If you had a Bon Jovi record, you went to
market.
Jail.
Wow.
There was no such thing.
Wow.
So
yeah,
there was no, oh yeah, well, here comes Wanted Dead or Alive. I'm going to, you know, that didn't matter. So the second night,
funny.
Being, you know, like I'd said, learning my craft, knowing what I do for a living, I went, got it. Second night, I take a Russian soldier. I trade him T-shirts and blue jeans like you hear in all those great stories. I get his Russian soldier's uniform. I say to the band, start playing the first song. I'm going to enter from the back of the stadium. Don't go anywhere. Just stay on the intro until I get there. And I come through uh-huh. the entire audience doing a strip tease, the gloves, the hat, the scarf, the coat, jump up on the stage. We win. Happenstance, bunch of pyrotechnics goes off right as I hit the stage. Did I have anything to do with it? I don't know. But needless to say, no one kicked our ass the second night. Tommy turns to Doc, punches him square in the face. The audience is going crazy. We win the second night. They fire Doc. And, you know, yeah. and that's true. Every word of it happened.
Well, because apparently there had been a mandate that there was to be no pyrotechnics.
There was agreed upon.
Wow.
But desperate times, desperate measures.
Right, right, right. Oh, John, thank you for telling me that.
If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
When your work presentations and docs look good, you look good.
Design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva.
Start with a designer-made template and use it as a springboard for your design.
Add images, graphics, charts, and more from Canva's massive media library.
If you feel like you have a lot of ideas, but it's hard to organize them into a succinct format, I can relate.
Yeah, so when we're putting together a pitch deck for a movie idea that we have that we're currently working on, mm-hmm. We're not going to use an old-fashioned deck. We're going to use Canva so our deck really pops. It's a complete game changer. So presenting our creative ideas, it's going to be like never before. We're going to wow people with our decks.
Wow any audience and finish your work faster.
Start designing today at canva.com, designed for work.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up and we'll meet again.
I really want to touch on the Jon Bon Jovi Soul Foundation. You're doing such amazing work tackling the problem of homelessness, food insecurity. They launched a food bank in Long Island. Where can people donate to that?
The JBJSoulFoundation.org. I've had it for JBJ. Some 15 years now. We build houses from coast to coast, and there's three JBJ Soul kitchens that are our restaurants that there's no prices on the menu if you want to affect change directly. If you were to come and put 20 down on the table, it paid for your meal and the meal for somebody else in the restaurant who technically are in need. You'll never know who's in need because it's communal seating, and those who are in need especially, but I'd tell you that you're missing out on a part of the party if you didn't do it, but they volunteer. So we empower any and everyone who comes by volunteering, which is what keeps our overhead down. So we have three of those restaurants. We had a food bank out on Long Island during COVID that was feeding 25,000 people out on Eastern Long Island.
God.
So we've been doing that for a number of years, and I've had the foundation for 15 years already. And like I said, it's nearly 1,000 houses that we've built and the three restaurants and a food bank when it was necessary. So it all works.
Amazing. There's no delicate segue. I want to ask you about your rendition of Here Comes the Sun at the inauguration. It was beautiful, really, really beautiful. Do you feel extra pressure, John, covering a song like that, something from an iconic artist, as I'm sure people feel pressure covering your songs?
Well, thank you for that too. But when the inaugural committee were putting it together, then they determined that they wanted to have people around the country and were fearful of someone like me who was in Florida at the time traveling up and bringing people from New York, blah, blah, blah. So they said, how about if you do yours in Miami? And I said, yeah. And I says, and I've got a great idea for you. Instead of doing Do What You Can, the single from the record, I would like to do Here Comes the Sun. I think it's the appropriate theme for trying to bring people back together. I'd like to do it at dawn. I'd like to do it, you know, on a pier just outside of Lauderdale in Florida. And so everybody said, hey, yeah, great idea. And so I was able to get it.
That's really cool. I like the way you say dawn. You have still have a slight New Jersey. Is that New Jersey?
Yeah, I better.
Two on.
I better.
Yeah.
The song and video for Story for Love, it's so good. You incorporate home video footage. Why was that song important for you to write? And I'm wondering, what have your wife and kids taught you, how they've shaped your writing, your music?
Well, they're always an influence to some degree, right? Because they're a big part of your life. But because I realized, like I said, this was such a topical record, one of the topics that we all really had to come to terms with in the last year was family. And so that song made it to the final cut because we all got either closer or certainly close to our families for these last 12 months. So I think we all had a different understanding of our families today than we did even a year ago. So the song made sense to make the final cut of the record. And then because I've written it about my family, I did hope that people would relate to it as much and make it about their own.
Yeah, well, it's really, it's beautiful. Do you ever think about changing the band name to something other than Bon Jovi? And why did you change the spelling? It was, your name is Bon with a G.
Yeah.
Was it just like people were like, oh, is that Guy Ovi? Was it just harder to say?
Yeah, people never pronounced it correctly. And remember, like I said, the story with Runaway is I was on the radio and had a record deal before there was a band.
Right.
You know, band wasn't, you know, on that early stuff. And when I was out promoting Runaway with the hope that I could get just a little more cachet in the community, I one by one asked what became these guys, hey, would you play with me for a couple of weeks? Because like I said, you couldn't keep an original band together. There's no money in it.
Wow.
And so, you know, they all said yes. And one thing led to another. And then the first record and they've been, you know, Tico, Dave been with me ever since.
Wow. Do you guys think you're just going to keep touring? I mean, and you must miss it. We talked a little bit about that. But do you think you'll be like the Stones and just keep doing it?
I don't think so, to be honest. You know, I have jokingly said forever, I wish the Stones would retire only because I could see where the end zone is. But he just keeps going. And McCartney keeps going. And Bruce keeps going. And I'm like, somebody lay down already. You know,
a lot of pressure.
Oh my God, I don't know. I mean, Paul McCartney's like 78 now and can't wait to get back on the road. You know what I mean? So I know Bruce can't wait to get back on the road. Me, I'm 12, 13, 15 years younger, 18 years younger than McCartney. I don't see me doing this in 18, 19 years from now.
Well, and this is not to say that they don't have that, but you must also have.
They're great at it. God bless them. They're great at it. They're doing it at the top shelf, you know, level still. I personally don't think I need to live out of a suitcase, you know, at that age and phase of my life. But I love writing songs. You know, I like writing songs. When you write a song, you think it's good. You want to record it. You want to share it. So one thing leads to another, but I don't live to get in, you know, another hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a serious thing, right? I don't know if people realize that that amount of touring. I mean, that's becomes, what, a year? How long do you do for
an
hour?
A year of your life. And it's just physically and mentally taxing. You know, it's just, it is what it is. It's an incredible job. It's been a great adventure. I'm going to do it next year, but I'm never going to do the 240 show tours again. You know, we would do on average in those years when we were really running hard, we'd do 240. I have no desire to do that.
Right. John, when a song of yours, which I'm sure happens all the time, when it comes on the radio or you're just out randomly, you're at a bar, do you get embarrassed? What's that feel? Do you get embarrassed? I dated a girl who was in a band and I would put her music on the thing and her Scottish, her bandmates would always get embarrassed. They would always get mad. What are you doing? That's a fucking Beamer. That's a fucking Beamer. Do you get like, come on, you guys.
No. Again, I'm past that. You know, it's like, I get it. I know that a bunch of these songs touch people's lives the way music touched my life. And I've been in situations that, you know, it just blows my mind that the songs that we wrote, you know, in my basement or Richie's basement or, you know, that kind of thing have been on the radio for nearly 40 years. And
right,
it blows my mind. It's
people singing them at ball games. And
yeah,
stuff.
It's mind numbing. It's just, but it makes you want to do it again. It makes you want to do it again. It makes you want to be great again.
And I bet.
That's why we keep doing it. If I were not doing it at the level that I'm accustomed to, I would be done. I'd retire. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we keep having these big hit records and playing the big stadium. So it's all good.
And what is this is a lightning round really quick. And our time is very limited. Unfortunately, I could talk to you for hours. What is your most, this is always the embarrassing one to ask, but I got to do it because it's a uniform thing. What is your most commonly used emoji?
My teenage children. I have them come in and hit one of the emojis.
Oh, right. Okay. Which ones do they, have they gotten you into?
I'm lucky if I get past the smiley face or a birthday cake. That's
okay.
That's as far as it goes.
Okay. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play and why?
Oh, I'd want to be Tom Brady.
Uh-huh. Wow. Who wouldn't?
Yeah. Tom, he's such an inspiration. Not only is a great athlete, but he's a smart athlete. He's a great guy. He was just a great guy. Who wouldn't want to be Tom Brady?
Well, it's funny, John, we always, I think on every episode we've mentioned Tom Brady. And my brother was saying the other day, because I do the show with my brother, the intro and the outro. And he was saying, you know, if people didn't know any better, they just tuned in for a couple snippets here and there. They might think it was a Tom Brady themed podcast.
I'm good with that.
And I know you're close with Belichick. Unfortunately, we're Jets fans.
Oh,
so,
God, I feel for you.
You should.
I really do.
Yeah. We thought Darnold was our savior, and we got to figure it out.
No, you don't even have Trevor Lawrence. You even blew that one.
I know. Couldn't even lose properly.
Right. I'm sorry about that.
Maybe Deshaun Watson. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, your go-to snack food, your I don't know if you smoke, but if you're stoned, you just get munchy.
I don't know. Maybe M&M's with peanuts is the first.
Ah, it's my brother's.
Good one.
He'll like that answer. What is your favorite movie sequel? We're talking about Young Guns.
Godfather 2.
Godfather 2, yeah. God, that Young Guns 2 is fun, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
I love those movies.
Of course, yeah.
Are you still close with those guys?
I talked to Emilio not too long ago, as a matter of fact. Yeah. And on occasion, I'll run into Kiefer or Christian Slater. But it was a magical time in my life to be close with those guys. It's been great.
Yeah, I bet. What is your – it's funny to ask you this. What is your go-to karaoke song?
Ha! Obviously, I had never been in a karaoke until I went into one with one of the charities that had me disguise myself and go in. So I'd never been in one before.
How did you disguise? What disguise did you wear?
Oh, I don't know. I just looked like, you know, some kind of derelict with long hair and a beard and a mustache. But, you know, I went into a karaoke bar. I'd never been in one ever.
No shit.
No, it's not like I go into karaoke bars to sing. I sing all the time every day. I didn't need to go.
No, I know, but I. That's true.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's true. Pass on that.
Well, so wait, but what did you sing, John, when you went?
I don't think I did.
What
other people were singing.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't know if I could have did now that I think back.
Who was your very first celebrity crush?
Ooh.
John's got a wistful look.
Yeah, because I'm trying to.
A very handsome, wistful look, far away look.
Michelle Pfeiffer did something special, and Cher in the 70s did something very special too. Those are the first two that come to mind.
Oh yeah, that's Michelle Pfeiffer. Wait. Hard to beat. If you had to get a tattoo, another tattoo, what would you get, and where?
Oh my goodness. I don't think I could come up with one.
Tom Brady?
Yeah, no, right. Number 12.
Just huge numbers on your chest. What is your favorite fruit, John?
Pineapple.
Uh-huh. Who would you want to play you in your biopic, in the Jon Bon Jovi story?
Halle Berry.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
I want Halle Berry to play me on set. Just so
you know, I can see that.
Here, I want to go to her meter. And that's the only way I'm going to get a chance to do it.
That's true. That's a good point. And she'd have to study you.
You know?
She'd have, yeah. What is your, who's your favorite Muppet? We mentioned the Muppets earlier. Did you watch the Muppets? You were probably already a rock star by the time they were.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It'd be the Sesame Street characters. Cookie Monster. I'm a Cookie Monster.
Yeah. Your kids watched it?
Sure. Elmo, all that stuff, of course.
Are your kids impressed by what you do? I mean, did they get to the point where
my older kids are old now. My daughter, Steph, is 27 and Jesse's 26. So they get it. And then the younger ones are 18 and 17. And they have come of age. Now they get it too. Now it's not just some abstract. And in this last year, it's been interesting because my youngest has taken to music. He's the only one of the four. And he's starting to write and he plays and sings. And it COVID, that was good for that, you know? So they're all very aware, but none of us live that kind of, you know, thing. It's just not
right.
My house.
For a while, I imagine it was just like a thing that, a reason dad wasn't here. It was like...
It was always more alive in the neighborhood than in our house. It was like, your dad is, you know, it's so like... My kids, they didn't understand that, but they'd bring that home to us and you go, oh yeah, I got to explain to Mr. Smith, we don't do that. But you know, it gets to a time and a place where I get it, I embrace it, I love it, I'm appreciative, and we move on.
Yeah. This is controversial, dogs or cats?
Dog. Yeah. I hate cats, not a cat.
Yeah. this actually is controversial, and you might not be able to answer it, but the Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
That's tough. I like them both for different reasons. It was that the Beatles, the songs were, they were from another planet. That whole amazing singing and cuteness was cool. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Stones have been my favorite rock band, you know, period. Like, you wanted to grow up and be Mick Jagger. You know, I don't know Mick Jagger, and I really wish I did.
You've never
Him. I've met him. I've shook his hand. I don't know him. You're like, I know Paul McCartney.
Yeah. We mentioned Here Comes the Sun. What would be another, if you were to go to a bar and put the Beatles on the jukebox?
Day in the Life is the song that I sit there and I go, God, where did that come from? And I've asked them, you know, Paul a thousand questions over the years. And, you know, where did that come from and how? And do you have a notebook of half starts and all that kind of stuff? I've had many a conversation. I'm blessed to actually be able to call in my friend. So, you know, they were from another planet. And I've told them that. I said, George and John just went home.
Crazy. Yeah, well, no, he must be very, I can only imagine. Does he? That's a good question. Does he have a bunch of...
He said that every song was written in a day, except for Baby, You Could Drive My Car. And they had just run out of ideas. And he came back the next day. And one of them said, beep, 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 beep. Yeah, move on. And that was the end.
Oh, my God.
That's the story.
Beep, 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 beep. Yeah. Oh, my God. In a day. Jesus Christ. Yeah. So that's so cool. You get to kind of, that's cool. You get to ask him that questions like that. Wow. Well, this has been cool for me to get to ask you questions like this. So thank you so much. I know we're over the time, but I could do this for hours. That you've been so easy and fun. Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you. Where am I talking to you today, by the way?
Well, this is, I can't believe you couldn't tell, Fairfield, Connecticut.
Oh, you're just in Connecticut. You're not in LA.
I live about 5 minutes from where I grew up, which has been good during this. Yeah. Oh, shit. John, I forgot to ask you, Seinfeld or Friends do you watch?
I would have been a Seinfeld guy.
Yeah. Okay. And so when might you tour again? I mean, is there a tentative plan to get
conversations out there? Conversations have begun to start in Australia next February, but you know, I think by then everything will be open and ready to go. So,
I hope.
Yeah. I'm confident that it'll start this fall, but we'll go out next year for a bit. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I look forward to it, and I can't wait for to hear the album 2020. And we'll talk all about the foundation. And thank you for all your work, all the music, and for your time. I really appreciate it.
It's been a joy. Bye, buddy.
Thank you, sir.
So that happens.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Gravelly. We're saying cool way too much. I'm getting self-conscious about it.
It's uncool. It's uncool to use that word so much about one person.
You know, we've had cool guests on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Like Matthew McConaughey.
Well, I thought Jane Goodall.
Kobe Smulders.
Yeah, very cool.
Who else is cool?
Oh, so many.
Kevin Bacon.
Oh, come on.
I mean, by the way, again, Kevin, people who are cool our whole life.
Yeah.
That's a very special. Kevin Bacon. Someone. Yes.
Yes, for sure. I hope he's listening.
They remind me of each other.
They do.
I bet they're friends. I bet they know each other.
Why didn't I? They have such similar vibes.
They do.
They're similar moods. That's not cool. Yeah, they are. It'd be weird if they weren't friends. You know what would be? That'd be the coolest matchmaking thing to do, to set those two up as friends. People wouldn't believe that I was the one that set them up. They'd be like, how'd you guys become friends? You know that nerd, Justin Long?
He set us up.
Oh, weird.
You know, the more I think about it, I would be shocked if they...
Oh.
Maybe not... Maybe weren't friends, but we're acquainted
with
each other.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. You know what was shocking is that... Not shocking, but it was a surprise that Bon Jovi wasn't friendly with... Didn't really know Mick Jagger.
That was surprising.
And I thought it was cool that he admitted to like wanting to be friends with him. Because he's like, to Bon Jovi, Mick Jagger was to what Bon Jovi is to a lot of kids, people
our
age.
Of course. But he is friends with so many, Paul McCartney.
I know.
And it's hearing an icon. This is the first time we've ever had a massive rock star on the show. So there's something very strange and cool about hearing him talk about other iconic, cool people like Bruce Springsteen and Paul McCartney in such a casual way. But he can because he's on that level.
I know.
But it's weird.
It's weird. I know.
Because I think of those people as being, like he describes the Beatles,
larger than life, on another planet.
Mm-hmm. Like they're not real people.
Well, that's what was so...
But they are.
That it was almost disarming about him is that he just was so easy to talk to. He just seems like a guy who... got out of
like a regular guy.
Yeah, like he avoided all of those. That's why, how cool that he can like sort of like reflect on his career and like the things he got to do and the fun he had. He gets to be kind of wistful and like somewhat romantic about it and have it in its place, but also have this real life. Like he seems like, even what he said about touring, he's like, I can't imagine living out of a suitcase anymore. And like, he's got this like family. He seems like he likes his kids and his wife. You know, he just seems like he avoided a lot of those pitfalls.
Well, because I think we all have this preconceived notion of rock stars as being a certain way.
We romanticize.
Not only that, but we imagine them having certain flaws, like, you know, certain ego issues or like diva issues where they need to be, they're spoiled. Hearing him talk, and like I already knew he did all this great philanthropic work, but hearing him talk reminded me that we so often judge people prematurely in a similar way that I judged Louis Anderson. You know, I judge comedians as being kind of dark and cynical, and it just takes someone to break that stereotype to come on and be like, oh, he's just a regular guy.
Yeah.
You asked him what sport he would want to play, and he said, I don't want to be Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And you said, who wouldn't?
I was so excited to identify.
That someone else brought up Tom Brady?
Yeah, it was somebody like that.
Yeah.
It's also like, it's funny that he would want to be him, because I always think the people who would want to be Tom Brady are like, you know, the guys calling into sports radio shows who are like 50 pounds overweight and like sort of unhappy in their lives. But he is, I would say, in many ways, seemingly on par
with Tom Brady. Like, it's funny that he aspires to be somebody.
I know.
I think he probably meant it more like he's just like his friend, and like he's
sure.
a good football player.
For someone like Bon Jovi, there's like a small handful of people that it would make sense that he would want to aspire to be.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like
Nelson Mandela.
No, I'm saying in his world, Mick Jagger is one, Paul McCartney's one.
Yeah.
But there aren't many. There aren't many musicians even who are like higher than him in the echelon of music.
But then you think like, forget identifying him just as a musician, but as a person, you think like, to want to be somebody else or to aspire to be like somebody else. And this is a controversial thing. I didn't know how to bring up with him, but I keep thinking about, whenever I think of like Mick Jagger, Paul McCartney, these guys, I think of, I mean, they're still doing it. They must love doing it. They play like they love doing it. And like he said, they're still at like top of their game.
I know what you're going to say. You throw Paul Simon into that category too.
Yeah, their hair. Dying their hair.
They've
Another cool they've thing about
done,
Bon Jovi.
They've done certain things to make them look younger.
There's a degree of vanity,
sure,
that is on display that Bon Jovi doesn't seem to have.
I agree.
Makes him cooler.
I don't think there's anything wrong with someone dyeing their hair,
right? Especially
for the record.
Especially if it's Madison Reed or a sponsor.
Of course not. Nor do I have a problem with people doing things to their face to make them look. If that makes you feel good, then go for it. All power to you.
Right.
But I also think it's cool to not do that.
Mm-hmm.
So by when that you're logic, in a position where like a rock star is, there must be so much pressure on people, on them to stay young looking and relevant. And,
and maybe
that's a big thing. Same with actors.
And maybe Bon Jovi's, you could argue, he's just lucky. He like, his face is still really handsome and his hair is cool. So it's white. So it's like a light gray. It looks cool. So what? It's a different color. I think that about, it's weird. I have this, and this is from the time I grew up and the cultural norms that have been like established in my world and, in my experience is that for women to, and maybe because our mother did it for a while and that was, but for women to dye their hair isn't weird to me, but it's.
But for men to do
for
it.
For men. And especially, like you said, somebody who's like a rock star and like it should be like confident in how you need jet and also
no,
like
I know, but again,
they're in their late 70s, you can have jet black hair,
but again,
it's weird.
But again, the flip side of that argument is that because they're rock stars, because they're actors, because they're in like a quote unquote young person's profession,
they have to keep
they
up
have with, extra pressure on them to keep their youth and to be marketable.
I know,
I do think that they're. I do sympathize with that.
Well, in Paul Simon's case, hopefully future guest, I'm sure he's not listening, but like that, the stuff he did is, I think, is just makes him look so different. And
That wasn't his intention. His intention probably was to stay younger looking.
I know. We shouldn't judge.
No, but we are. We are.
Well, but he still is cool. I mean, like, but that's the thing. It's surprising to me because the music, Paul McCartney. How does it get? You can't get cooler than Paul Simon, McCartney, Mick Jagger, and yet there's a degree of it's like you said, you don't know anyone until you like sit down with them and like, I don't know. He must have insecurities about that. You're right. They must. There's no other explanation to like them doing stuff like that to themselves, other than like they have insecurities, like everyone else does.
Right. Everyone has insecurities.
Yeah. Yeah. Except Bon Jovi.
I don't think I'm ever gonna dye my hair, but. That's not because I'm above it. It just means it's because I'm not at any sort of level where people are looking at me and like judging me like they are with some other people.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So the stakes for me are so low that it's easy for me to say, I'm not going to dye my hair. I don't care if my hair goes gray.
I think I would like
But if I was a big rock star, I might have a different answer.
Well, here's my hypocrisy. My hypocrisy is it is important enough to me to have like to not have gray hair only because the idea of aging is like something I struggle with and like getting older and time passing by. That's so for me to have gray hair would be like it'd be a reminder that like I'm getting up there and I also am like sort of happy that I
have so few. I have a couple.
You do have a couple. I have a couple too.
You do. But like, I'm happy that it's still
a couple gray hairs.
Yeah. But it's also like, if when my face, which it's starting to, gets like starting to look older, I wouldn't want. So I wouldn't dye my hair only because I think it'd look weird. It looked like it would be. I think if look fake,
there'd be a weird contrast.
A contrast between an older looking face and like jet black.
But
hair.
See, right now you're lucky. You still have a pretty boyish face. So if you had gray hair now, it would be. It wouldn't quite match, you know, like, because you have a face that suggests you're still pretty young and you're not ready for gray hair.
Well, I remember thinking that about our uncle. Remember when Uncle John started going gray? I remember thinking like, oh, weird, that's a strange. I kind of forgot he was that age where you would get gray hair.
Right.
He always had such a boyish, yeah. And to me, he was always like that age. And yeah, I guess maybe, I don't know. Well, we've really exhausted
this. Well,
I
digress. You asked him what his favorite karaoke song to do
was.
Oh,
man.
And he was like, I've never been to a karaoke.
Yes. It's like,
he's so unfamiliar with it because he's never had to do it because he's always been a rock star.
I know.
Every since he was a teenager.
If he's ever had the itch to do karaoke, he scratches it by going on stage at Madison Square Garden and singing his own songs. I know. It's like, I faced this a couple weeks ago with Dr. Jane Goodall when I was like, I couldn't even ask her because I just avoided I couldn't ask her because it's like, she's definitely never done karaoke, and if she has, like, well, I lose out. But I knew she hadn't. But it was almost as weird to ask.
Now I wish you had asked her.
I know, just to hear how she
said. What if she had said Living on a Prayer?
I believe it's Living on a Prayer. It's the only one I ever do. Yeah, it was fine. But I do wish I'd asked Bon Jovi, John, what if he's ever, like, overheard people. He must have, if it's weird to overhear people singing his songs, because like, especially Living on a Prayer is like,
oh my god, there's a handful of Bon Jovi songs that are constantly
played
and like sung karaoke
at what I say sporting event,
ball games.
Yes,
Living on a Prayer is a song that is, I always hear people do karaoke.
Oh yeah.
And I almost never hear it done well. It's always attempted karaoke. I've heard it so many times. It's like one of the most popular karaoke songs, but people never do it well because it's such a hard song to sing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really hot.
And people do it when
like
they get living on a prayer. But they do it when they get like, I can only see like sloppy people doing it who have like extra confidence. That's the song you do like, and you're like pretty drunk.
You need to have
you need to have like a lot of liquid courage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you never hear it. You're right. I never hear it. I've heard that song so many times at karaoke.
It's never good.
It's never good.
Bon Jovi's the only one who can sing that song.
That's true.
So
don't you wish, now I was also imagining him going to the karaoke when he had he said his disguise was like a beard.
Oh,
he
must have been horrified hearing some of the songs.
God, yeah.
It must be hard.
Just butchering his songs.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. This is a letter from Chloe Rose Schwartz. Subject, thanks for being real human beings. Oh, it's a funny thing to be thanked for, isn't it?
To be real?
To be a real human being. Well, I have to...
I don't think she meant it literally.
No, I know. Thanks, Chloe. Sorry to immediately shame your very nice compliment. Thank you. Hey, Justin and Christian. My name is Chloe. I'm 28 and I live in a small town in Florida. Ah, lucky. With my husband and our dog, Cheddar. I've been a longtime listener of the podcast and I'm a big fan and try to share it with as many people as I can. Well, thank you, Chloe. We appreciate it. Justin, back to Chloe. Justin, funny enough, so many of your movies are the backdrop to my adolescence without me even really realizing it. Galaxy Quest, Crossroads, and she says, hashtag Free Britney. I got to see that. And my GD... A G/D and my G.
You've never seen that? God. It's when you can't write, it's like sacrilegious to write G-O-D. So you G-D.
Oh, I've never seen that.
You've never seen that?
No, maybe I know
I'm
a lot
surprised.
Of sacrilegious people.
I'm
I
surprised.
Just correspond with the sacrilegious
people. No, I'm sorry to shame you, but I am very surprised you've never
I
seen
guess
that.
I, you know, I've seen it in the context of, I've seen it when it's God, G-D damn.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, I think I've seen that. But okay. I don't think I've ever seen it on its own. And my God, I can't count how many times I rented Accepted from Blockbuster when I'd stay home from school sick. You should have just bought it.
I miss Blockbuster.
I do too. I know. There's one.
You don't both have to miss Blockbuster.
You know, there's a. Oh, you know what? There's a documentary that I should mention really quickly. If you do, if you're like us and miss Blockbuster, there's a documentary about it, about the last Blockbuster that my friend was just promoting, and now I can't find it. Anyway, Google it. It's the last Blockbuster. I think there's one left in the Pacific Northwest. Anyway. But then why'd she rent it so many times? Just buy it. I've seen it so many times in the like cheap bins.
Stop shaming Chloe.
I'm shaming my own movie. It's in the cheap bins.
Oh, right.
And Chloe for her. But it's nice to rent it that many times. Back to Chloe. Anyways, I just wanted to send a note over to both of you to tell you that you are really putting so much goodness into this world at a time we need it most. I know that any time I listen to an interview on your show, it's going to be filled with humanity and genuine curiosity. You are both always seem to be so honored to speak to whoever may be on that day and seem to actually enjoy talking to them. So many people have podcasts these days, but many of them sound like just another thing they are doing because everyone else is. Yours stands out because you so clearly care and you so clearly enjoy it. I also love to listen to your sibling banter. It reminds me so much of me and my brother.
Cool.
The point of me saying all this is that you both have inspired me to try to give more of that genuine curiosity, humanity, and acceptance of others in my daily life. Wow. I think we can all agree this year was shit, and we saw so many things that made me question where our humanity has gone. You guys have continued to defy that. It's really a beautiful thing to enjoy listening to and learning from someone else, and you've helped me rediscover how to do that. Now I try to be more like that each day. Thank you for your genuine conversation and for being such a light. I can't wait to keep listening. Wow. Really sending nice. Sunshine, Chloe. What a nice letter. I mean, was nothing nicer. Thank you, Chloe.
It must be nice to have some of that sunshine now. I'm looking out at a gray, dreary, freezing cold day. I miss Florida.
I do too. And small town Florida, really cool. But we're right around the corner from, first of all, the vaccine. Christian and I get the vaccine pretty soon. And also spring.
Yeah, we're eligible very soon. Uh-huh. Just heard.
Hopefully you are all staying safe.
Thank you, Chloe. Thank you. It's a really kind letter. And if you guys would like to write in any letter, it doesn't have to be as kind as that. Our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com. And thank you to our rock star guest.
I have a question for you.
Our iconic rock star guest, John Bon Jovi.
Yeah. I have a would you rather for you.
Okay.
Would you rather have to have an unlit cigarette just dangling out of your mouth all the time, or wherever you go, or all the time be carrying a boombox that's playing "Living on a Prayer"?
The cigarette, easy.
But you can play it softly, gently. You can play it like it doesn't have to be blasting.
Just if it was an unlit cigarette versus carrying a boombox that was making no noise sounds. Yeah. I would still pick the cigarette.
You would?
I'd carry a boombox everywhere. A cigarette, an unlit cigarette in my mouth.
You'd look like such a turd.
I'd get over it.
Every time.
You know what you look like carrying a boombox?
I know, but they have smaller boombox. You're thinking of like a big 80s style, like
a boombox.
Run DMC. Like,
that's a boombox. Boomboxes aren't 3 inches tall.
Some boomboxes are small. You're thinking the word boom, like it's supposed to be like a big. Yeah, you can have like a boombox, like a 6 inch.
Am I putting it on my shoulder?
Yeah, you have to carry it on your shoulder.
Then no. It's more work. It's as simple as that.
Oh, you've shown.
One is bigger and harder to carry.
Yeah, but you look. Okay.
If the question was a boombox making sound or a lit cigarette all the time, I'd have to think about it.
Think about it? You'd want a lit cigarette?
I wouldn't want it, but I wouldn't inhale. I'd learn to.
I know, but you'd be anywhere you go, you couldn't go inside. You'd have to. You'd get kicked out of everywhere because you'd be.
You don't think you'd get kicked out if you were carrying around a boombox that was playing music?
Remember we were on the beach in North Carolina and those kids were running around with that boombox? I think maybe that's what made me think of it. And they were like, they seemed like they thought they were cool. They were like blasting this music, this like shitty music. I felt so old.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that. I also wouldn't want to lit cigarette. I haven't smoked a cigarette since I was 28. I was 1 week shy of my 29th birthday.
Wow.
So I haven't smoked a cigarette in over 10 years.
Wow. I wonder if Bon Jovi ever, he must have smoked cigarettes.
He sounds like he does.
Yeah, but I'm sure he doesn't anymore once he learned how like dumb and dangerous it was.
I would guess he doesn't smoke.
Yeah, but he did.
Also, to hit those high notes on Living on a Prayer, how do you do that if you're a smoker?
I know. I like it, yeah. Anyway,
thanks to
him. We'll ask him next time.
Yeah.
Did you notice how I was fishing for an invitation to one of his shows? I was like, oh man, I can't wait to.
Yeah, you're like, I can't wait to be in the front row in Australia.
So much thanks to him.
And if you would like to check out his great work, and if you would like to maybe donate to this food bank that he started, you can go to jbjsoulkitchen.org.
Another good thing to be doing is listening to music, just putting headphones on and listening to an entire album. So I encourage you to do that with 2020, his new album. Giving voice to these crazy times we're living in. And thank you to all of you who are listening to our crazy voices.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Do-do-do-do-do-shaboom.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It's co-hosted and produced by you,
Christian Long.
Also produced by one,
Megan Monaco.
The senior producer on this and all of the past maybe 99 episodes is
Michelle.
Mish.
Lands.
And when it comes to audio engineering, who else gets their hands on this one but none other than
Sergio Enriquez.
And
the executive producer is Marshall
Louie. A person named
Marshall
Louie.
For Wondery. I'm saying how I view sexy and cool.
Sexy and cool, yeah.
Whereas,
like, do you think Anthony Kiedis is cool?
Yeah.
He's sexy, right?
And cool. There's no such thing as sexy but not cool.
I know, but
cool
there's...
but not sexy for men, as far as I'm
concerned. Oh, really? See, I think Michael Jordan...
I can name... You're saying Michael Jordan's not sexy?
No, he's sexy.
He's very sexy.
What about John Stockton? He's not really sexy. But he's cool.
I think he's sexy. I'm not saying he's like the most handsome guy in the world.
Yeah, I guess he's sexy. Yeah,
there's something like, kind of like cool.
Yeah,
and sexy
yeah. I guess he is. I guess he's sexy.
Cool and sexy go together.
Yeah, they do. Sting is. That's funny. My instinct is to say that he's cool.
See, I would say about a man, there's no such thing as a cool man who's not sexy, and there's also no such thing as a sexy guy who's not cool.
Like Michael Caine. Michael Caine's cool.
And sexy.
Yeah. Yeah, he is, I guess.
Try to name a guy who's cool but not sexy and vice versa.
Huh.
I don't think you'll do it.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, la, la. Where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.